Okej, zaczynamy. Drodzy Państwo, witam Państwa bardzo serdecznie na kolejnym z wykładów 28. festiwalu.
Dear ladies and gentlemen.
In this case. So, ladies and gentlemen, a cordial welcome. This is the 28th edition of a Jewish Culture Festival, which has been lasted like 30 years, right? Anyway, we have a great, great pleasure and an honor to continue our educational process led by the Professor Dan Bachat, who was the last year at Professor Bachat's lectures? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Perfecto. Who is the first time? Lucky. Okay, so Professor Dan Bachat became the pillar, absolutely pillar of the Jewish festival and the knowledge and the wisdom. So I'm so proud and honored to have him again with his wonderful wife, Anat, who is sitting next to the professor, and Dzień dobry. So, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to, I mean, the Zion is a main subject of this year festival, and Professor Dan Bachat, doesn't matter what is written in the catalog, doesn't matter. Whatever Professor Dan Bachat is going to say, it will be a Zion in heaven, heaven in Zion. Whatever it is, we are proud and honored to welcome cordially in his home, second home, Professor Dan Bachat.
Mogę usiąść? Tak.
Tak.
Tak, to będzie lżej. To dzień dobry. W tamtego roku ja przyrzekłam mówić tego wykładu po polsku, a niestety...
I promised last year that that I would speak Polish. So, but I haven't been able to improve my English in the meantime.
Public that I'll be able to speak in Polish. So meanwhile, during the year, I don't have with whom to speak Polish, so it did not improve at all, so I have to go back to English, and I hope the people won't be disappointed. My lecture is actually, I'm attaching it to the topic of this year's festival, to the story of Zion, Zion in Hebrew, Zion in Hebrew, Zion in English. This is one of the most problematic problems which we have in about Jerusalem. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you that to this very day, we don't have an answer to the question, what does Zion mean? And what does it refer to? I must tell you, I'm a Zionist, but if you ask me, what is Zion? I don't know. So what do I mean I'm a Zionist when I don't know what I am? So this is actually, it's a real problem. Even the name Zionism, which we have today in politics, is also, it's a new invention. It started only with the beginning of the Zionist movement in the end of the 19th century, with the first Zionist Congress, 1897. So altogether, it's a phenomenon which is not so easy to explain what exactly it is. What I will try to do today is to somehow clarify the problem as much as I can. And I start with this slide, which you see with the picture, which you see here, which is a very interesting thing. This is a model of Jerusalem. I've made it in the Bible Land Museum in Jerusalem when we celebrated 3,000 years of Jerusalem becoming the capital of the Jewish people under King David. So then, as it was 3,000 years, we decided to make models of all the capital cities of the ancient world. It was, for example, Luxor of Egypt, it was Bogoske of the Hittites, Assur of the Assyrians, Babylon of the Babylonians, and so on, to show that they were national capitals all over the Middle East from quite an early period. But the only one which is still serving as a capital after 3,000 years is Jerusalem. That's the only one. And I'll try also to explain why is it? Why is it? Why did Jerusalem become so important? But this I won't do today, because I do it after tomorrow, because today I want really to stick to Zion, to understand what Zion is. So when we start the story on this model, I like this model because it gives us all the possibilities. What do I mean, all the possibilities? The historical nucleus of Jerusalem is this little hill which you see here, which is named today the Hill of the City of David. And it is very interesting to note the term City of David appears in the Bible few times, but the first time it shows up when King David conquers Jerusalem, which in connection with the conquest it is called Jebus, and then the Bible say, and he sat in the citadel of Zion and called it the City of David. That's what the Bible say. What does mean Zion? As I said, we don't know. But it was a typical habit of the ancient world, when a king conquered the city, to call it after his name. So naturally, the City of David will be like that. Moreover, the name is repeating few times when every king of the dynasty of King Judah, when he dies, and the Bible says that God liked what he did or did not like what he did, he said, and he lied in the tombs of his fathers in the city of David. Which means that we know already that in antiquity, the name City of David referred to something else than David himself. Because in the Bible it says in the book of Samuel that when David conquered Jerusalem and he settled in the citadel of Zion, and he called it the City of David. So at first, the reference of City of David is to a citadel, and then we see that entire this section of Jerusalem, this one is the City of David. It is quite well fortified by nature, east, south, and west, but it is not fortified to the north. And therefore, a citadel was constructed here. This is probably the citadel of Zion. Now to say another very important remark. You know that the hill of the City of David was discovered as such in a very, very late period. Very important to say. Already Josephus Flavius, the famous Jewish historian of the first century AD, Josephus Flavius speaks, when he speaks about the upper city of Jerusalem, about this part of Jerusalem, this area here, which is today outside of the city walls of the old city, he calls it Zion. And because of that, all from the days of Josephus Flavius to this very day, the upper part of the hill, which is west of the City of David, is named Zion. If you are already completely perplexed, that's fine, because this is exactly what I want you to be. Because the problem is that we really don't know. Where did Josephus Flavius take the name Zion and put it up there? And I'll tell you more than that. Because of Josephus Flavius, to this very day, people worship, the Jews worship, a tomb of David, on the hill of the city of, on the hill of Zion, because the Bible says that David was buried in the city of David, and Zion, of course, because all the others who died after him lied with his father, their father, in Zion, yes, in that area there. So it was natural for everybody that David is buried there. So the Jews worship today a tomb of David on Mount Zion. And I will tell you in secret, and promise not to tell it to anybody else. The tomb of David, which the Jews worship today, is actually a crusader tomb of a knight. fact of life. I'll tell you the other that, in order not to offend only the Jews, but also the Christians, I'll tell you that the room of the Last Supper, which is above it, is believed to be where the room of the Last Supper of Jesus was. It is all a crusader structure. It was all a part of the crusader propaganda for holy sites in the country, which is very important. And I'll show you tomorrow, in the lecture tomorrow, that we are trying seriously to adhere to the stories of the first of the Old Testament and the New Testament, to find and locate in precision the holy places that are described in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Especially the lecture today will refer to Jesus in Jerusalem, because we read so much of Jesus in Jerusalem and we don't know where he has been. What did he see? When he speaks about certain things, what does he talk about? We today, we want to know where those places are. And we are, through scholarship, we are able really to learn and to know much more about it. And I think that the picture, as I'll tell you tomorrow, the picture of Jesus in Jerusalem is much clearer today than it was, let's say, 50 years ago. So far, it is really a very interesting thing. At any rate, so first of all, I introduce to you the city of David. Now, when King Solomon became the king, he left the citadel of Zion and he moved further north and he built a temple. And around the temple, there was, I would say, kind of enclosure. Very interesting. Why did he build it there? Why did he choose this point? Why did he choose this point to build his temple there? Very interesting question. And I'll answer the question. The story is that here in this area is a little hill. I don't know if you can notice here. You can see there are slopes down here, slopes down here, slopes down here. And here is a summit of a hill. That hill is the source of sanctity of Jerusalem. It is named in the Old Testament Moriah. Moriah, in English, Moriah. Moriah. Now, in spite again of a lot of research in the past, I can tell you that Moriah in Hebrew means foundation. Because as you know, in Hebrew, every word has a root. The root is including three consonants. Every name, every word, three consonants. And the three consonants, the root of the three consonants, which refer to this hill, in Hebrew it will be Yud Resh Hey, means to found. To this very day, when we use in Hebrew the term to lay the foundation stone, the verb which we are using to lay the foundation stone is exactly the same root as we lay for Mount Moriah. Very, very important, and I'll tell you why. Because in the Bible, few times in the Old Testament, it refers to Mount Zion, which is to the north. Mount Zion, which is to the north. To the north of what? To the populated city. Which means when they say Mount Moriah, Mount Zion, relating to the north, this is the city of David, where the writer of Psalms used to live at that time, he refers to the mountain which is to the north. And suddenly you can understand that Zion and Mount Moriah are synonym. They are the same thing. You see? So, that's very interesting. But many times in Psalms, for example, it says Jerusalem and Zion, which means exactly corpus separatum. It's something different, something which is separated from Jerusalem. Very, very interesting. I'll tell you another very important fact before we go on. As you see, this is actually a view of Jerusalem as it was in the first temple period. Now, so already we have got two phases of it. First phase, David conquers the city of David, and then Solomon expands the city, and this is the Solomonic temple. So you can ask me, what is this? Well, very interesting. in the 8th century BC, which means 200 years after King Solomon added Mount Moriah and the temple to the city, King Hezekiah, one of the greatest kings in the history of Judah, he decided to enlarge the city because in his days, the kingdom of Israel, remember, when now we are speaking after Solomon, we speak about this as Judah, and there was the kingdom of Israel. The kingdom of Israel collapsed under pressure of Assyria. The Assyrians conquered it, and many refugees went and lived in Jerusalem. The city suddenly grew in an enormous way. So what did King Hezekiah do? He enabled them to settle wherever they wanted, and he built a city wall which goes all around. This city wall is very well known to us because excavations have revealed in many parts of the city, like in this area, like in this area, like in this area, and this area has discovered parts of that wall. So we know that King Hezekiah more than doubled the size of the city. And this was a city which existed till 586 when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the city. You see, so this is actually how the city looks like. And now what I would like to say is one thing. You see that the city is less populated than the city of David. I don't know if you can see in this picture. This is very densely populated. People start to go down to the valley, which separates the two parts, and then up again. And here you see it is very sparse because there was not much time, because all that started around 700 BC. And remember that 586, Jerusalem was already destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. So we have a problem. So again, look, when we stopped at this point, we stopped at this point in a very interesting point. And this is Zion, you already heard, is something which may refer to Mount Moriah, to the where the temple was. Zion may refer to Jerusalem as a whole, which will include the city of David and Mount Moriah, and Zion can be something separate, Jerusalem and Zion. Again, something completely, completely different. And I'll tell you more than that. Jerusalem of today, try to imagine, this part here includes the old city of today is something like this. The old city of today is something like this. In other words, here is the Armenian quarter of Jerusalem today, here is the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem of today, and this is Mount Zion, which is outside the city wall, and you can imagine the tomb of David somewhere here. This part here is, the greater part will be the Christian quarter, and this part which is here will be the Muslim quarter. This I do on the background of this one, so it's not precise, but you can see very interesting thing. When you get today to Jerusalem, to the old city, in this area is a gate to the city named Jaffa Gate. Jaffa Gate. And from here you go straight, there is a street which goes all the way down to the Temple Mount. The interesting thing that all the pilgrims, the Christian pilgrims, who were very knowledgeable and they knew everything, it is really unbelievable. You can see the pilgrims who are coming, they already ask a question, what is Zion? So what do? They say everything which is south of the street which runs here, which is today, to this very day, the main street of the old city of Jerusalem, all those who come here, to the south it is Zion, and to the north it is Jerusalem. You see, they are trying to find a solution to the question, what is Zion? So they solve the problem. Actually, the old city of today of Jerusalem includes in the south Zion, in the north Jerusalem. It's no good, but that's a fact. Now, what I did here is a very interesting thing. I took the topographical map of Jerusalem, and here you can see some very important features. First of all, you can see the hill of the city of David, which is here. Number two, you can see here Mount Moriah. This is the summit. This is exactly where the temple is. Now you can see all the valleys which are around Jerusalem, like the Kedron Valley. You can see here the Hinnom Valley. And you can see here another hill, which is distinctively the best part of the city because it is very high and very well protected. And on each summit of each of its three summits, here is the main synagogue of the Jewish quarter in Jerusalem, the Churva synagogue. Here on the summit, the Armenian quarter, here is the cathedral, the Armenian cathedral of St. James. And here is the summit. In the summit was the Church of Zion with all its histories, the Byzantine Church, the Crusader Church, and today the Room of the Last Supper and the Tomb of David, all are located here on this little hillock. And there is a big church today, which is a Benedictine church, German Benedictine church, which is called the Church of the Dormition. So altogether, you can see very well. If I have to decide which of which will be Zion, I will take any part of this one, which is the hill of the city of David and Mount Moriah, unless this, which is called Mount Zion altogether. Although today in the map, when you come today, Armenian quarter, Jewish quarter, the city wall, and Mount Zion is outside. Mount Zion is outside the city wall, which is here. Very interesting. And what I show is actually the confusion which we have, with the name Zion. And if, again, you remember that to this very day, there is no definition of the grammatical root of the name Zion. How is it, Zion in Hebrew, how is it? And then maybe through this to explain what it is, till now all the suggestions failed. We don't have an answer to that. And this is actually, I could finish my lecture with this, saying we don't know what Zion means, finished, let's go home. No, we will try better. And what we will do, we'll see again the hill where the temple was, hill of the city of David, which you see is very small. And therefore, already in antiquity, or not in antiquity, in the beginning of the 20th century, scholars started to deliberate. Is it possible that such a small city, which is occupied by the hill of the city of David, it is really tiny. Is this the city where all the great prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah speak about the city full of people, full of corruption, of course, and they are scorning the Jews for being so corrupted and God will punish, and actually the arrival of Sennacherib is a punishment, the arrival of Nebuchadnezzar is punishment. Is this great city so tiny? And it were the German great scholars of the universities, you know, of religious faculties like Göttingen and other, they started to say, no, Jerusalem was beyond that. It was on what we call today the Hill of Zion. This is actually the hill which I've just shown you before. So you can see that even the size of the city, which can be the key to understand what Zion means, we don't have. I'm going now to a kind of, to make it life easier for us. And I'll do something like that. What you see here are the mountains around Jerusalem. You can see here the hill of the city of David. And what I put here in this drawing, I put here today's Temple Mount. You see today's Temple Mount. And you can see the hills here. And in the middle, you can see another hill. Here is where the temple was, which is the summit of this hill. This hill is the hill which is named Moriah. Now, from archaeology, we know that on this hill were tombs which are 500 years before Abraham. From the 23rd century BC, already this area was famous as a cemetery. Not only was it a cemetery, but it was also a probably cemetery of dignitaries. Because at that time, people excavated tombs in the hard rock, and they made caves which are quite big, and in these caves, they buried usually one person. So you can imagine that if they invest so much in digging in the hard rock, digging only for one person, it must be people of importance. And hence, I will say, that Mount Moriah became holy for as a cemetery already in the 23rd century BC, 500 years before Abraham. No wonder that Abraham is, when he is ordered by God to go and sacrifice his son Isaac, he will go to Mount Moriah. But the Bible doesn't say it explicitly. He says, as if in a kind of an anonymous way, go to one of the lands in the one of the mountains in the land of Moriah, which I will show you. To which one will he go naturally? The one which has got already a certain holiness in it. It is only in Deuteronomy that for the first time, in Chronicles, it is for the first time that the Bible say explicitly, and Solomon built the temple on Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah, as a separate mountain, is mentioned first time in Chronicles. And if you think of it, that the Chronicles were written in the exile of Babylon or after, when the name Zion does not show anymore. The name Zion does not show anymore. It is a very important fact that our knowledge of Zion goes as long as we have the city of the first temple period. But then it disappears completely. It will show up hundreds of years later by Josephus Flavius, who refers to what we call today Mount Zion as Zion. This is the first time. Look, when a lot of building activity by the Jews took place in today's Jewish quarter, to this very day you can go and see on one of the lintels of one of the elm houses which were built by the poor, on it is written by Tei Machseh, which means houses for the poor, Behar Zion, on Mount Zion. So the fixation that Zion is the western hill of Jerusalem, which I showed you around, this is a fixation of daily life today. But it is definitely does not have to do anything with the historical reality. This is the Temple Mount. This is a modern map of the Temple Mount, and I bring it only to show you, if this is the Temple Mount as today, the Dome of the Rock, this mosque which you all know, the mosque which you all know with the golden dome which you always see in Jerusalem, look where it is standing. It is not in the center of the Temple Mount. It is somewhere on the side. And when the Muslims decided to build the Dome of the Rock and the Aqsa Mosque, which is down below here, they were disturbed by the fact that the Dome of the Rock is not in the center. They would like very much to build it, but they could not, because they wanted to build it where the Jews pointed out that here was the Holy of Holies of the temple. So what did they do? They did two diagonals. One is coming from this part and going all the way down to here, and the other diagonal goes all the way down from here and goes all the way to here. And they found that this is the center of the Temple Mount, and they built a shrine which became a place to indicate where the true center is. Why do I say it? Because I understand from that the Muslims wanted to build the Dome of the Rock in the center of the Temple Mount, but they could not do it because their construction was dictated by the place where the Holy of Holies of the temple was. And that's why I bring the Dome of the Rock here. And look what happens here. This is the Dome of the Rock. Everybody has seen it. You know it. And the interesting thing is that it is built here at this point is a cave. If you look here, this is the plan of the structure. And you see down below, this is the Holy Rock, which is the summit of Mount Moriah. Again, Zion. Is this summit of Mount Zion is here. And when you go under here, down below, you can see a cave. You see, this is the shape of the cave. The shape today is modern, but we know that it actually looks like a tomb of the 23rd century BC. You see, this is how it looks. When you take a picture from the dome down, you can see here, this is taken from the dome. You can see here the holy rock, which marks the place of the Holy of Holy. It is the summit of Mount Moriah. And in Judaism, the higher the holier. and therefore it is here. But note a very interesting thing. Down here is a hole. Down here is a hole. And this hole, you see, if you look at this picture again, this hole is this one. You see? And it goes down to the cave, and we go to the cave, and this is the cave it looks today. People don't go down, or they don't go, when they go down while visiting the Dome of the Rock, they go down to the cave, they see nothing, and they go up again. The Muslims made a habit to pray there, and you can see the carpets and everything. There is even a praying niche here in this place. But the point is, what they don't know actually, that this cave with a shaft, this hole which goes down, the shaft and the cave are actually typical burial cave of the 23rd century BC. In other words, the summit of the mountain, which may be named originally not only Mount Moriah, but also Zion. Remember that I call it Mount Moriah because of the Book of Chronicles. I don't call it Mount Moriah because of Genesis. Because in Genesis it says only one of the mountains in the land of Moriah. And the problem is that people did not understand so clearly what it is. And therefore, after the story of the attempt to sacrifice Isaac in the bondage of Isaac, the Bible at the end speaks in Hebrew. The name Moriah means God will be seen. Everybody who knows Hebrew says that Moriah and to be seen does not go together. They are from different, completely different roots. And why did they do it? Because they didn't know what it was. In other words, the writer of the Old Testament, of Genesis, of the story of the sacrifice of Isaac, for him, what was known when David conquered Jerusalem, you see, because he did not write it right at the time. He wrote it during one of the days in the first temple period, after King David. He wrote something, what happened before King David, he wrote after King David, and then he doesn't know anymore. So he says, God will be seen. He believed he solved the problem, but we do not accept it. And now we have a problem. Again, what is Zion? Because if it is so much that already in the days when the Old Testament was written, already then they don't know what Zion is, that's really a question which for us is difficult to answer. Now I put again, in order to refresh you, I bring again the hill of the city of David, and you can see that if I go here to the temple, how for them Zion was far away in the north, far away in the north, as if Zion means Temple Mount. No, this means Zion means also Jerusalem. Although sometimes it says Jerusalem and Zion, but sometimes Jerusalem is Zion. When you read the Psalms, Jerusalem and Zion are pseudonym. They are not pseudonym. They are the same word. They are the same word. They are the same reference. So altogether, you see that we are completely, completely perplexed. What is the problem? The problem is that when we try, so we have got to go to the beginning, and we go down to the city of David to see what was city of David in the time of David. We try to understand what the city of David was in time of David, and it's very difficult to say. Because if you are trying really to analyze, to understand what they're talking about, you must start from the beginning. And what is the problem? As I told you, the fact that the city of David, what we call today the city of David, is the historical nucleus of Jerusalem. Until 1880, everybody was sure that Old Testament Jerusalem, namely the tomb of David, Zion, and everything, was on Mount Zion, because this is what is said by Josephus Flavius. And only in 1880, a German scholar, while analyzing all what he could, went down to the hill of the city of David and said, this is the historical nucleus of Jerusalem. And since then it is. But what was the problem? The moment he said it in 1880, all the archaeologists of the world who are dealing with biblical archaeology went to dig the city of David to look for all the treasures, the legendary treasures of David and Solomon and all that. What is the result? The result is that when the modern scholar came to study the hill of the city of David, there was hardly any place where you could dig and find something from the days of King David. And it was so far that many scholars said, well, it cannot be that David was such a great king if his capital doesn't have any remains from his days. It must have been a tiny, poor city, a village, nothing more. And how could the greatest conquerors in Jewish history be such a great person when his capital is so poor? One of our friends, the archaeologist, she took a map of all the archaeologists to dug in Jerusalem, in the Temple Mount, and she found a tiny place where she could see that no one touched before. And there she excavated, and to our greatest surprise, she found some remains. It was the first time that remains from the time of King David were discovered. When I bring you these pictures, sometimes I feel embarrassed, I will tell you the truth. But what you see here is this very structure which you see here. But this is not what I'm talking about. When I speak about King David, the discovery from the days of King David, what we have here is a patch of a floor, a paved floor here, and here a certain wall. You see how poor it is, almost nothing. But this is what is left, because the city of David was excavated so many times, and not only by archaeologists in the 19th and 20th century, but also during the centuries. For example, when Emperor Hadrian built Jerusalem as a pagan city, I'll speak about it tomorrow, what happens was that he actually robbed all the stones from the city of David to build his new city, the pagan city of Jerusalem, which existed for 1,000 years. So altogether, I'm not surprised that nothing is left. So people came and say, King David cannot be King David. I mean, all the halo of the great king cannot be. So I'll tell you the story. Fortunately for us, when excavations took place in a city called Dan, which is in the upper north Galilee, they discovered two fragments of a great monument which was laid by the king of the Arameans about 100, 150 years after the reign of King David. King Hazael of the Arameans, as you'll find in the Old Testament, fought against Israel, and he won the battle. He took some cities in captivity. One of the cities was Tel Dan. So there he put a great monument of victory over Hazael, the king of I don't remember what king it was. In Israel, I just forgot, I keep forgetting names, I'm getting old. At any rate, the interesting thing is that when he wants to say that he managed to vanquish Israel, how does he call Israel? And this gives the answer. If you look here, you'll see those two letters here. What you see here, the three letters. He calls Israel, not Judah, Israel. He calls it the house of David. Bet David is written here. The house of David. In other words, over 100 years after the separation of the country to Israel and Judah, and King David is already dead for years, he still calls, of hundreds of years, he still calls Israel the house of David. So the impression of David must have been a real great thing, that the memory of this great king. So I don't have any inferiority complex. When I speak about the hill of the city of David, I know that it was rightly named like that, because he was really a great king of his time, whose memory lasted for so long. At any rate, when we go further on, we come to the story of the temple which was built there. I show you here one of the restorations or the reconstructions where we believe the Temple of Solomon was. It is connected with the biblical description, with understanding of temples, of contemporary temples. It is a very interesting structure, although there are many ideas of how did they look. For example, You know that one of the famous feature which we have, one of the famous features which we have in the Bible when it describes the temple are the two columns which are at the entrance of the temple. So some scholars believe that it was from the outside, because the unusual thing of them was they were not made of stone, they were made of bronze, or rather copper. It was made of copper. So people believe they've got a kind of a ritual function, but we don't understand what. Other scholars say that they were not just monuments, but they supported the roof. So what did the reconstructor of this model do? He put two doubled columns. One is here, and another one is here. It doesn't go so well, but still no solution. We cannot understand and we cannot answer the question. This is the plan. And why did I bring you the plan? I'm not going to speak about the Temple of Solomon here, but you can see here two freestanding columns outside and two standing columns which support the little roof which is here. But the important thing is that as you walked here, you had to go higher and higher, because you have got to go to the summit of Mount Moriah, and this part, which is the Holy of Holies, you see, it is not built of stone, it is built of wood. It was a kind of a wooden cage which was put into the temple. So this is really the summit of Mount Moriah. Why do I bring it here? Again, because I want to ask a question, is Mount Moriah Mount Zion? Is this where Zion is? And maybe by understanding what was going on there, maybe I'll find an answer what it is. You see how it looks. You go into the temple, you walk into the structure, and here a wooden structure is built inside, and inside here, even higher by step, were those things. It's not a human thing, because Judaism doesn't allow it. There were two things which are named in the Bible. They are named cherubs in the Old Testament, two cherubs. Some people believe that there were two, as if two sphinxes which are embracing the Ark of the Covenant or something like that. Remember, the first temple had still the Ark of the Covenant, which disappeared later. In the second temple, there was no Ark of the Covenant. It did not exist anymore. So altogether, this is the idea. Is this here, those steps are leading us, are those steps leading up to the summit of Mount Moriah, to the summit of Mount Zion? I cannot answer the question. Going again, what happens next? All the biblical descriptions which we have, unfortunately, the colors are very bad, I'll have to change it. But somehow, under King Hezekiah, you see the city extends here. And maybe the biblical writer is sitting here, and he sees here City of David and Mount Moriah, and he cannot decide. Is all this Jerusalem and Zion? Is this Jerusalem and Zion? This is a question which when you read Psalms, you'll see that you don't get an answer. Now, the royalty of Jerusalem, it's in importance all through the First Temple period, is beyond doubt. What I show you here we have a capital of a stone. Some of you who are acquainted with a very primitive Greek art will immediately notice that this looks like a Ionian capital. If those of you who know. So we call it proto-Ionian capitals, and this was typical to royal cities in the Bible, in the Old Testament. So you have here, such were written, found in Jerusalem, for example. Outside of Jerusalem was discovered a temple of the time of a palace of the time of the kings of Judah, and we believe that this was a palace which was built by King Uzziah. And King Uzziah was a leper. So he was not allowed to live in the palace of the kings in Jerusalem. So he built a certain palace. This palace still exists, and there was discovered this. It was also found in the famous biblical cities like Megiddo, Hazor, and even the capital of Israel, Samaria. So altogether, when I speak about capital of Israel, I mean the separated kingdom, Judah and Israel. Yes, this is also not to confuse, and this is what we have there. And this, the temple goes on, always attached to the same place. This is how the temple is described in one of the famous Dead Sea Scrolls, which describe us Jerusalem, the temple as it was. in later period in the idea of the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scroll. But here we have the Temple of Solomon, which is very much, I don't want to speak much about it because I keep it for tomorrow. It will be very important. But in any case, you see, always attached in themselves to the same place, to the summit of Mount Moriah. And I ask you a question, such an important mountain. And remember that I told you that in the Old Testament, it is not mentioned. It is only mentioned as one of the mountains in the land of Moriah. The real Mount Moriah as such is mentioned in Chronicles. And Chronicles were written after the destruction of the temple, after Babylon, after the exile to Babylon. You understand? So I say, how can it be that such an important mountain, as we know, is Mount Moriah? There is no question about it that Mount Moriah is where the temple was. It is not mentioned in the Old Testament. Is it possible that it will be completely ignored by the writer of the Old Testament? No. He simply continues all through that period to call it Zion. And I believe that in a certain way, Zion and Moriah should be synonym, and they are synonym because they are from different periods. You see, the name Zion is more stressed during the existence of the first temple period, and the name Moriah becomes more and more visible and heard of after the first temple period. You understand what I want to say? I think this, for me, will be the key. Moriah in the Old Testament will be Zion in the New Testament. Later, not in the New Testament, but after the destruction of the temple. And this is very important because now I think if you accept this solution, then you can understand better Zion and Jerusalem. So Jerusalem will refer to the inhabited part of the city. Zion will be the mountain. You understand when he speaks about Mount Zion to the north, it is okay with me. And therefore, I think that I'm trying partially to give the answer. Yes, this is all variation of the temple. And I want to show you that a lot of the impression of the temple was there, but it's really not so important. In any rate, what I would like to say clearly, that in spite of the fact we are now today, our festival this year is Zion, but I'm trying really to solve the problem and to clarify the picture what Zion means. And I hope that I've done it. What can I say more? I cannot say more about something we don't know. So I only leave you a few minutes of questions because I'm quite sure that you might have some. No questions? Huh. Yes.
What is a Zionism?
Zionism today, that's a good question. It's political. But I'm happy to answer. Zion means... Oh, again, the name Zion is important. Zionism believes that the Jewish people, as every nation has its own home, Jerusalem, or Zion, again, you see the same problem, and the country of the land of Israel. By the way, in Hebrew, you know, if I will ask you, how do you call the whole country where we, the Israelis and the Palestinians, live? How will you call it? When you open atlases, let's say, of before 1948, when the State of Israel was founded, how do you call it? Palestine. You see, on my birth certificate, it says Palestinian citizen. I'm a Palestinian because I was born in Palestine. Now look at that. Actually, I'm not, but my parents were already Palestinians, so I'm called Palestinian. But the point is a very interesting thing. It was called Palestine. But already at the time when the country was named Palestine, the movement which said that all the Jews come and live in Palestine is Zionism. And again, in Hebrew, Palestine, you see, before the State of Israel was founded, when I speak, let's say, I live in the 14th century, and I want to call our land, as a Jew, 14th century, see, I go to the medieval era. A Jew will call our country Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. That's the name in Hebrew. There is no other name. When I speak with friends about our country, I mean the whole country, you know, historically, I never call it Palestine. In Hebrew, you never will hear the word Palestina. Never. In Hebrew, it will be Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, the only name. Now look what happens. When the country is called Eretz Israel, with the movement, we decided after 1897 that every Jew to go back as a Pole, we live in Poland, and the English, we live in England, a Jew should live in Eretz Israel. And for them, they go back to the historical name and call it Zion. Even the Israeli hymn, our national hymn is... How is our national hymn? The eye looks to Zion and Jerusalem. You see, even the national hymn, which was written when it was still named Palestina, Zion and Jerusalem, these are the two things which are going. So therefore, because the idea is repatriation to the land, we call it Zionism. Of course, today we have a problem because all the American Jews don't think that all the Jews should live in Jerusalem or in Israel. They think maybe you should live in New York and Washington. That's your opinion. But they all know that by ideology they all belong. And remember one thing, even the most religious, the most anti-Zionist Jew, when he reads the prayers, the Jewish prayers, Leshana Ba'a B'Yerushalayim. Next year, we should be in Jerusalem. Should be not as tourists, but to live in Jerusalem. This is actually the basic thing, belief of every Jew today. And remember one thing, even the ultra-Orthodox, who are even anti-Israeli, they say the state of Israel should not have been founded. It should have been founded not by people, but it should have been founded by God. By the law of the God, when the Messiah comes, I speak about the ultra-Orthodox, the most radical, no one likes them. At any rate, the point is that he also, six times a day, prays for Jerusalem. Three times in the daily prayer, and three times in the prayer for the food, which we pray after the meal and not before the meal. So you see that the moment a Jew is born, he's already born with Jerusalem with him. And we've got a saying, no matter where you go, Jerusalem is going with you. That's what it says. And I'm the best proof. I'm now in Poland, but you see, I live with Jerusalem. You speak about Jerusalem, you see. That's a proof that the saying is true. Jerusalem, the Jewish people are like this. It cannot be separated. And about it I'll speak the day after tomorrow. Okay. So thank you. Yes, please.
What do you have to say about the fact that certain people who say there's no connection to Jerusalem?
Ah, that's my plan to speak after tomorrow, the decision of UNESCO. Yes. Look, it is so deep. I want to tell you the absurd is so terrible, because I'll tell you, if the Jews have got no connection, just to open one view, if Jerusalem, Jews are not connected to Jerusalem, so what to do with Jesus? Jesus was in Jerusalem. Tomorrow I'm going to speak about it. Ah, they solved the problem. Jesus was not a Jew. He was a Palestinian. You see, that's how they solve it. I'm not laughing, I'm serious. And one of the things I was surprised, and I hate to speak about it in Poland, that Catholic countries like Italy, like Spain, like France, voted for it. They actually cut the legs of their belief. How can it be that Jesus was not Jewish? When all the practices of Christianity stem from Judaism. Yes, I've never seen a Christian praying five times a day and fasting the whole month of Ramadan. You see, and I can give you so many examples. It is stupidity. It is evil. It is evil. It is bad. And the question is, where does it come from? This I leave to everyone to interpret it himself. I am afraid, and I'll say it, and people don't be angry at me, anti-Semitism came back to Israel. The period of sorrow after the Holocaust, finished. Now there is a new period of the... Look, Spain, every day you hear another anti-Semitic story in Spain. I don't speak about somebody desecrating a cemetery or something like that. Valencia, a prosperous city, decided to boycott Israel. Last week, Pamplona, the kingdom of Navarra, the historical kingdom, decided to boycott Israel. Why Spain has got to boycott Israel? Why? For what reason? For what reason? We have got a problem with the Palestinians. Spain doesn't have problem with the Vascos, the Basques. France does not have problem with Corsica. Every country has got a problem with something. We have got a problem with the Palestinians. And the problem is, and excuse me to go to politics, I didn't mean it, but your question provoked me. The story is very simple. When I ask anybody here why Israel conquered Jordan, the part where the Palestinians lived, we conquered from Jordan. You don't know. Jordan started a war. And we begged them, stop, don't go in, stop, don't go. No, they went and we conquered. 2 days after the day, after the Six-Day War, when Israel already ruled the part which is Palestinians, what happens? We said we are ready to give back every inch, including East Jerusalem, for peace. What was the answer? Does anybody know what the Khartoum Conference is? Has everybody heard about it here? Has anybody here? Lift your hand. I want to see how many here. One, two, three, four. What is it, for those who don't know? Immediately they convinced the Arabs, all the Arab leaders convinced, and they say the three no's. No peace, no negotiation, no compromise, nothing. No recognition. We don't recognize the state of Israel. And so we are left with the hot potatoes. And this the world doesn't know. So what do they want us? To give it for nothing? We gave for nothing the Gaza Strip. So look what happens in Gaza Strip. We know that we can give back only with negotiation. But they don't want to speak to us for a simple reason. I don't know if you know. The work which, when they will have to speak with us, they will have to make some compromises. Yes? Maybe to find a solution for Jerusalem, which will leave us in places and so on. We'll give part here, they will get part there. There will be compromises. They don't have to do it. The European Union is doing the job for them. They are all the time, they're oppressing Israel all the time. So the Palestinians sit there and say, we should keep quiet. Europe will do the job for us. And if you don't believe me, I will tell you how. You know that Trump is preparing now a peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. You know about it probably if you read papers, right? So what does Europe do? They sent Mr. Mogherini, yes, the Italian, the foreign minister of the European Union, and the foreign minister of Sweden, who is a really not only bad woman, but she's a villain when she refers to Israel, you don't know it, and in England, and they are going to meet Trump to squeeze him not to do good things for Israel or not to enable Israel to enjoy the peace agreement with the Palestinians. And on the other hand, they go to the Palestinians, don't negotiate with Israel. This is the European foreign policy today. It doesn't mean that we don't have good relations with Europe, because we've got cultural relations, economical relations, amazing. Science, Israel is one of the greatest powers of science in the European Union. We get a lot of money from Europe for development science and so on, but and politically they are our worst enemies. This is the situation today. Why? Everybody should understand what he wants. I've got my opinions. Did I give you an answer? Okay, thank you. Any more questions? You see, every Israeli is a politician. Yes. Yes, please.
Since it's about politics, many anti-Semitic people would say that they don't like Zionists.
Many anti-Semitic people would say they don't like Zionists. But if the Zionist is someone who is a Jew and wants to live in Israel, why anti-Semitic people wouldn't like that? They should be sort of happy.
I didn't understand the end of your word.
Why would anti-Semitic people blame Zionists or don't like them? if this Zionist is someone who likes to live in Israel, then anti-Semitic person should be happy with it, because he usually doesn't live in Israel.
I will tell you my family story. My mother comes from Lemberg, from Lvov. My mother is Lvovian. And I was amazed to see one day, this is a small anecdote, the first time I saw non-Jewish Poles was in Cairo. I went to a mosque, a famous mosque in Cairo, and there were walking three Poles. I heard them speaking Polish, a woman and two men. I walked behind them, and for me it was a great excitement, first time in my life, to hear non-Jewish Poles. Can you imagine that? So I asked Państwo Polski, to Pani Kręci do mnie mówi...
Are you from Poland? And her question was, are you from Lviv?
Now I'm shivering. How could she know? From three words I said, she knew that I've got something to do with Lemberg, with Lvov. At any rate, going back, my mother walked in the street in Lvov in 1927. My mother was 11, so born 11, so she was 16 years. So suddenly a Pole, or maybe Ukrainian, you don't know, probably it was Ukrainian, because we've got a longer story with the Ukrainian, turned to her and say, Jew, go to Palestine. And wow, what does Semitic, they change from lying on the right-hand side and lying now on the left, and now they say, Jews, go out of Palestine. So what do you want us to do? That's very simple. If I tell you that over a million Jews who are of Polish origins, like myself, if this anti-Semite will be happy, million Jews will come back to Poland. What will happen? You see? It's not as simple. Israel is my country. I was born there. I live there. My culture is. I don't know if somebody has been yesterday to the concert of Chazanut. I don't know if somebody has been. It was amazing. But the moment I sung Israeli songs, I said, that's me. The other Chazanut, you know, which is more Jewish of long tradition, did not speak to me. But the three Israeli songs they sang, I was almost with tears. You see, I'm an Israeli. I don't have... Poland, for me, is just another European country, although I speak the language. You see? I think you never heard it from an Israeli before, but that's fact of life. You know, I know that in Poland there are discussions. Yesterday, the cab who brought me, and excuse me for keeping you talking about it, we came and we started to talk, and we spoke about Krakow, because I've been here before, I enjoyed the city immensely. And I asked him, are you from Krakow originally? He said, no, I'm from Kielce. And as you know, Kielce in Jewish history has got a very bad name because the pogrom in 1946. So immediately he told me, I didn't say a word. When he said Kielce, I didn't say a word. He said to me, I know that there is a problem between Israel, and then we started to speak about the Polish law. And I tried to find, I thought, look, I was happy because I've got a solution to the problem of the Polish law. Everyone has got, but I've got a solution to it. I said, I don't blame the Poles for doing it, because when Obama said that the Polish extermination camps, I understand why the Polish passed the law. I accuse Obama and I go out with clean hands. You see, because that's how it started. You remember, that's how at least that's the way I look at it from Israel. And you know that I've got a special attitude to Poland for good reason, because I like pierogi. Yes. Yeah. Can you speak louder? Who will come?
You.
No, I say, you know, you didn't get me. I say it is an absurd because Poland and me don't have anything to do together. What? Of the? I didn't hear you. I didn't hear, I'm sorry, I cannot.
We will be the first country in Europe having the number of the Nobel Prize winners.
Poland has good enough for itself. Listen, Poland can be proud of its culture, of its knowledge. I want to tell you, whenever I went to international conventions, of archaeology or art history, the best lecturers always were Poles. 2 years ago, there was a seminar in Jerusalem of Prophet Isaiah. Prophet Isaiah, how Prophet Isaiah goes into the Christian... No, so everyone lectured, you know, Isaiah, his period and everything. Came a young priest, Polish priest, he was Dominican, I remember his robe. I don't know what town in Poland, he wrote his PhD, and he gave a lecture on Isaiah in the Christian prayer. I don't think even that you think so much when you pray Christian prayers, how much is Isaiah? His lecture was, you know, I was sitting like that, like in yesterday's concert. I couldn't believe my ears. A Pole. I heard once a lecture. There was a seminar on doors of churches, of bronze doors of churches. You know, there is one, the most fantastic is in Gniezno. A Pole came to lecture about Gniezno doors. It was the best lecture on doors or bronze doors I've ever heard. I don't speak about the elegance, the beauty. I'm coming like Schmate, but he came so beautiful. So everything was perfect. I said, only Poles can be like that. I've been to Lviv, and I went and I looked at the beauty of the city. So what did say to me, all the people? You should have seen how it was under the Poles. You see, it is unbelievable. I hope that you are becoming happier and more proud and more proud. But you see, I don't have anything against Poland, but I'm not Polish. Poland for me is just another country in Europe, although always I have something to Poland. I cannot explain it. And that is the way. Look, my parents came from Poland. The food I eat is Polish food still. You see, my children, no. My children is already Israelis. They eat Oriental food. They are laughing at me when I listen to music, classical music. For me, you know, when I hear Chopin or Paderewski or Penderewski, for me, that's my culture. You see, that's how it is. But I'm the last generation. You see, I'm the last person to speak Polish my age. No one speaks Polish. I don't have any opportunity to speak Polish even. And why do I speak Polish? Because my parents, when they wanted to say secrets, they said it in Polish. That's how I learned Polish. You see? I hope that I'm conveying what I feel to the Poles, you see? And therefore, I'm not so angry. You know, the new law, again, it is spoken, a lot is being spoken in Israel about it, a lot, all the time. But I say, I accuse Obama, how could you say Polish camps? How could you do such a thing? Poland really needs, as we explain our point of political point of view, Poland should do it to the world. That's the way I see it. Okay? Yes, please.
Hello. You spoke about the land of Israel, Eretz Israel. It was clear for everyone that it will be land of Israel. According what I know, it was decided by Ben-Gurion in the day of independence that the name will be Land of Israel, Eretz Israel.
No.
So that's you can correct me, but that's what, yes, I read and what I know.
Our state is called Israel, not Eretz Israel. Because Eretz Israel in the vision, Eretz Israel in the vision includes today what is today Israel, the Palestinian territories, the Gaza Strip, and the western part of Transjordan. Remember that in the book, you know, in the Gospel of John, the baptism of Jesus took place on the eastern side of the Jordan. I don't think that something must be wrong there. But why the eastern side of Jordan? Because it was a part of the Jewish country. It was called the Perea. Makairos, where John the Baptist was beheaded. It was a part of the Jewish land. That's why Herod built his palace there. You see? So this is Eretz Israel. But of course, Israel is limited, it is much smaller, and it is only politically where the state of Israel is. The problem is that as long as we don't sign peace with the Palestinians, our borders, we know exactly where they are, with Egypt, with Lebanon and Jordan. Syria is a problem because we took the Golan Heights and we don't plan to give it back. And the West Bank, which we have to negotiate, you see. By the way, everybody in Israel, there were sometimes under Hafez al-Assad, the father of the present Assad, we wanted to negotiate with him. We did not come to negotiation, we did not arrive at negotiations because he wanted to go to the Lake of Galilee, to have a part of the Lake of Galilee. And this is why it did not go on. But today people agree that thank God we didn't have then peace agreement. Imagine all the fights in Syria to be on the Lake of Galilee. You understand? Now, since Syria fell apart, there is no reason why you should not keep this little piece of land called the Golan Heights, which is really tiny. Problems, problems. What country does not have problem? Okay. So thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. ואיך היו התשובות, איך היו התשובות שלי? היה בסדר? Я побоюсь, чтобы забачить, что в пожонку то взёнсь. Я не знаю, как всё роби. Eject, ест, так? А, вспомнил, так я то вот ещё робил в дому.
Trzeba.
Tak, to będzie tutaj, będzie okej, okay, tu. Chwila. W porządku. Teraz ja mogę. Tak, dziękuję bardzo. Thank you.